Hello, my fine friends, and welcome back to Destination Discourse. I'm your host, Stuart Butler, with Visit Model Beach, joined as ever with, drumroll, Adam Stoker.
Stuart, today is a monumental day, and I am so grateful for the opportunity to be here with you and with another incredible guest that I've really been looking forward to having on the show.
Yeah, industry legend. I've got to say, when I first joined the DMO world, this is kind of a weird point for me, because when I first joined the DMO world, I consume a lot of my information through podcasts. And the first thing I did was DMO podcasts. And the number one and number two podcasts were Bill Geis and Adam Stoker. And so you guys have been in my head for a very long time. And I am very thrilled to have Bill Geis on the show. Welcome, Bill Geis. How are you,
sir? Thank you. Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, of course. It's, you know, I know we briefly met once at a conference a couple of years ago, but I feel you're at a disadvantage, because I feel like I know you intimately because I've been listening to your podcast for 3 years, but I'm sure you get that a lot. And we're going to get to know each other a whole lot more today. Well, hopefully I disagree with some stuff and agree with some stuff and have a whole lot of fun along the way.
I feel like I need to let Bill know too. So there's a little bit of a thing here, Bill. I am incredibly excited that you're here. But Stuart gives me a hard time for not being excited enough every episode when he introduces me. And so, yes, it is a monumental day to have you here. But I also have now the responsibility of one-upping my excitement every single episode. And I'm not sure where it's going to take us here in 6 months, a year. But we're going to kind of scale up, baby steps. And who knows, maybe there's fireworks, a show behind me, a band. I'll bring a band to the show. We'll see.
Yeah. Maybe it's jumping up and down like Elon Musk, you know, just jump.
Yeah. That'll be what, yeah, we want to see your belly button when you do it too. That would be amazing.
You know, I've been practicing in the mirror, and I'm debating between the Tim Walz jump and the Elon Musk jump. And I've had a really hard time deciding who I want to emulate.
Right. You should mix them both together. You know, I think that would be great. All right. So let's jump in. So, This, as you know, everyone that's listening, there's a format to this. We're going to do Stu's News, and then we're going to do the topic. The topic may surprise some people today. I mean, if anyone's been listening to Bill Geis for the last several years, you know where his head is. He's all about the board setup, about the structure, about shared community value, about really providing value to the community from the position of the DMO. And so that's what, when we reached out to Bill, I thought we were going to be talking about. And in a weird way, we are with Stu's News. But the topic is going to surprise you, so stick around for that. But before we get to the topic, it is that moment everyone's been waiting for, the greatest segment in all of destination marketing. It is Stu's News. And Stu's News today is actually brought to you. Bill had suggested this topic, so it's really Bill's news today. And I don't know, Bill, if you want to do this one, if you want to talk a little bit about this little situation going on in Duluth. And it's kind of unique in some ways, but I think it could be a bit of a warning to some other DMOs, and certainly other similar situations have happened. But you want to walk through the history here of what's happened in Duluth? I'm putting you on the spot, if that's okay.
Yeah, and I think it is a warning to everyone that there are, I mean, you've got to be present in your community at the highest possible level, or you become another nice to have agency. And I think that's what happened in Duluth 3 years ago, where the then mayor didn't understand that the DMO wasn't an ad agency. And honestly, how you could not understand the role of a DMO coming out of COVID, but she didn't. She still saw the DMO as an ad agency, which, you know, for all of us at some point in time, if you're unsatisfied, you change agencies. Well, you can't change DMOs. And so what she attempted to do was essentially say an ad agency can do the work of a DMO. And that agency was from out of town, actually out of state. And that's, while they may have been more creative while they may have been edgier, while they may have been better marketers, I don't know, but they didn't have boots on the ground and relationships with the businesses in the community. And that's what the mayor didn't understand. And unfortunately, the board wasn't strong enough to stand up to her. And that's where we get back to what we do, which is board governance. And the board in every destination has to be rock solid, influential, and ready to go to war if they need to. And that board in Duluth at that moment in time, essentially just sat back and let the process go. So to your
point. Well, maybe that was part of the problem, right? Maybe the board wasn't educated on the value that DMO provided as well, because if they were, you would think that they would have had more of a fight in them than they did. So,
and I think the
education starts internally and works out.
Yeah, I think that in a lot of cases, boards abdicate to the CEO because that's the expert in town. And they figured, oh, you got this. Good. You know, you and your numbers and your community relations, you can handle this. And no, that's not the case, because that the CEO is one person. Those who make the decisions need to hear from more than one person. And I think that was the issue there, is the board essentially sent Anna out to solve the issue, and the issue was bigger. So anyway, what happened is, and I think, for those of us, I mean, it sucks for Duluth, but it's a great case study for the rest of us to see just how badly things went over the next 3 years, Duluth underperforming every other Minnesota community by a mile. I mean, it was really clear that losing a DMO has an impact. And now the new mayor is intent on reconstituting the DMO. Props to him. But he also understands this is going to take 12 to 18 months to do that. And so now he's not going to renew the contract with the agency of record. Their contract ends at the end of December. And so he's got to find somebody to at least do the work. So he's, and he said at the outset, it has to be Duluthian. Sounds very Star Wars, doesn't it? Duluthian. It has to be a Duluthian agency. Well, that's not what happened. When the votes came in and the process, which sounds absolutely sound, it came out that no, actually it's going to be an out of state agency that can do the work for the next 2 years while they reconstitute the DMO. So that's the background.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. So, this journey obviously didn't start 3 years ago when the decision was made. The journey started in the lack of education and showing the value that was being provided by the DMO for maybe a decade plus before that. But I do think you touched on something that's interesting, which is there is some a silver lining to this dark cloud for the rest of the industry. And like you said, it does suck for Duluth and they underperformed for several years. But now we have evidence, empirical evidence of what happens when the DMO doesn't perform its function the way it's designed to perform its function. And I think the savvy DMOs are out there compiling that data and putting it in slides to have in their back pocket when these arguments start to come up, inevitably in their future if they're not careful. So there is one thing. But
sadly, the mayor is taking a ton of crap for the fact that he said it's going to be a Duluthian agency and now it's not. But something? The agency that they've chosen is probably the best possible solution for them. If you can just get past that they're not located in Duluth, and you can get past the fact that they are the agency of record of one of Duluth's primary competitors.
Mm-hmm.
This is an agency that works internationally. I mean,
You can name it. We're okay naming the thing. It's Madden, right? It's the agency.
And so, in the interim, this is probably the best possible thing for Duluth, is to use an agency that has deep background, deep experience, national cred, get them back up and running. And hey, if the new DMO reconstituted looks back on the next 2 years, these coming 2 years, and says these guys are killing it, then they say we're keeping them. And if they if it has to be a Duluth agency, okay, so be it. They'll make that decision. But right now, I think the mayor is unfairly being blistered for the fact that, frankly, this is probably the best thing.
Yeah, yeah, and it's tough, right? If you have a process in place, I'm assuming they went through a pretty rigorous RFP process and they included multiple stakeholders and ultimately scored Madden above the other contenders, you know? It's, sometimes you don't have the agency in your backyard that is going to be the right fit at the right time. I mean, we've oscillated. We've used some local agencies in the past. We currently don't. But what we do is we have boots on the ground from the agencies we use that are out of town for certain things. You know, we have a couple of folks that on our social team that work for one of our agencies, MMGY in this case, that are located here in Myrtle Beach, because we don't feel like some of that work, capturing video as an example, that you can't do remotely, right? And so, but I think what's going to be missing from Duluth, and until they fix this, is going to be a problem, is you got to have boots on the ground. You got to have people that are integrated with the community, constantly talking to their investors every day to understand what's going on. Where's the vibe? Interacting with the visitors. I mean, that's the critical part, is knowing what the sentiment of the consumer is and what's working for them, what's not, where the opportunities are. And so I think DMOs in general don't, we spend a lot of time talking about our constituents and who we need to talk to. I don't think many DMOs spend enough time talking to the visitors. I think they're so focused on internal politics that they miss the opportunity to hear from, you know, the people that are spending the money. And I'm not saying that to say that visitors are more important than the locals, because I do fundamentally believe that the reason DMOs exist is to improve the quality of life for the community. And that's who we serve, but we do it through the visitors. But if the economy is being driven by the money they spend, we've got to spend time listening to the visitors. And if you don't have people in market, it's really hard to do that in a meaningful, continual way. So Adam, what's your take on this?
You know, talking about whether the agency should be from town or not from town, I can argue both sides of it, I guess, but honestly, I kind of believe that an agency from out of town, preferably in one of your feeder markets, maybe has a better understanding of how to market you than somebody local who just assumes. I mean, we did some work in a community a number of years ago where everybody in town says our number one asset is water, is we are surrounded by water. And I remember saying to one of my focus groups, where? They go, well, all five sides of the community is water. I go, where? Because you can't see it, because it's been built in such a way that they know it's water. That's why they live there. But a visitor would never see the water. And it, one of my favorites was, so, you know, you say you've got to have a CEO of a DMO who lives in town. And Romy Snyder, 20-some year director of Wisconsin Dells, CVB, did not live in the Dells. And she famously said, if I live in the Dells, I won't understand how to do this job. I need to live 60 miles away so I can look at the Dells as a product and not as my home. And it's like, really brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, it's a different perspective. I'm not sure I entirely agree with it, but you raise a good point about the different perceptions, right? When we do every year, we'll do a sentiment analysis of visitors and residents, right? And we'll understand in the hot buttons and the perceived problems and the opportunities and what excites these two cohorts, completely different. I mean, there's certainly overlap. There's certainly similarities, but you know, the perception of, you know, every destination locally feels like there's a crime problem or homeless problem or some other sort of burgeoning thing that is a hot button for residents that doesn't even show up on the visitors scale at all, right? And so we take that into consideration when we're doing our planning, you know, because we are talking to two audiences. We've got to make sure that the visitors see us as the best opportunity for them to take a vacation or trip, But we've also got to make sure the residents feel good about the destination. The residents feel good about the visitors coming in, and you know, to the destination, and that they're not invading and pillaging like some destinations have sort of become. You know, like if you look at Barcelona and others that we've talked about. But Adam, give us your take on this one. What's your top level takeaway from the Duluth situation?
There's a few things here. Number one that I want to say is I believe this may be one of the best arguments against calling DMOs destination marketing organizations, because the unsophisticated, and maybe I shouldn't use the word unsophisticated, I should say uneducated politician or board member is going to think that's all we do. All we do is marketing. And as soon as you believe that all a DMO does is marketing, you believe that you could outsource this to an ad agency and not have to pay the full-time salaries of the people and all of that. And so I think this may be a pretty good argument for DI's initiatives to change the name of a DMO to a destination organization, as opposed to a destination marketing organization. I do believe that, you know, as I was getting into the industry, it was very difficult for me to understand where a DMO ended and an ad agency began. And in fact, with some of the clients that we have with small teams, I think it's difficult for them to know where the division of roles is too, between where the DMO ends and the ad agency begins. And so I definitely, like, I sympathize with Duluth and the people that were in Duluth when the decision was made to go to an advertising agency. But since I own an advertising agency, I can tell you, we don't want to do the things that destination marketing organization employees do. And I think that it is a losing initiative to try to have an advertising agency handle advocacy and stakeholder engagement and customer experience development. I don't think that's a function that you can really outsource to an ad agency. What I will say is, I have a ton of respect for Madden, and I actually think Madden has made some really incredible hires over the last couple of years that I think gives them the best chance, to Bill's point, of being the agency that can possibly bridge the gap between where they are today and where they need to go. Yeah. I do think eventually they're going to have a local DMO that has boots on the ground to handle some of those non-advertising agency initiatives. And the third thing that I kind of want to touch on here is, one of the biggest mistakes a marketer can make is marketing to themselves. And so many, I'll tell you, we're in the process of doing some work on our organization that actually I think on the next episode I'll be able to share a little bit more about. The hardest thing you can do is work on yourself. I can do work for clients because I'm not emotionally attached to the product in the same way, and I don't have the blinders on that I do. But the hardest thing I've ever done is work on my own company from a marketing perspective. And so when I look at the idea, should an advertising agency be a local agency? I think there's a lot of great agencies that can do it. So I'm not saying they can't. But it's impossible to unemotionally approach the marketing of a destination if you're in it. I actually think you need to be able to see it as a visitor. And I'm not sure local agencies can. And so that would be my fear in forcing it to be a local advertising agency that a destination hires, because you're not going to get that outside perspective. They're not going to approach it like a visitor. They're going to approach it like a resident. But I do believe the DMO employees should be local for the most part.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. So, Bill, do you know, I haven't followed this story as closely as you have. Do you know what you said it's an 18-month to two-year sort of timeline? At what point are they going to start hiring people to represent the organization again? Do you know? And do you know what scale, what order they're going to do that in? Is it a CEO first, or are they going to bring in lower level folks first?
As I understand it, that process, once they get the contract done, and there is going to be some city council pushback, I think, given the amount of rancor that's going on right now. I think that decision is coming either this week or next. And, you know, if they have to go back and reissue the RFP, because if the city council says no, but I think once the agency of record is done, I believe it is the mayor's intent to go out and begin to advertise for key people to build the DMO back up. I mean, the DMO kind of exists because at the last possible minute, 3 years ago, it dawned on the mayor that, oh, wait, there's the convention and sports sales component that I didn't consider.
Yeah.
And so she left, I don't know, $400,000 on the table, and they've got like two or three people who are doing the sales work. So, I mean, Visit Duluth exists, but now it needs to be built back up into a full agency.
So who was leading the previous agency? Who was it? Was it the mayor? Was it city council?
No, I mean, it was one of the longest standing DMOs in the country. It was a 95-year-old agency, nonprofit, contracted to the city of Duluth. And Anna Tansky was the CEO. She had been there for 20 some years, first as their director of sales. And then when the CEO departed, she moved up to become CEO, highly respected. And, you know, it just was one. And she'll tell you, she and the mayor were friends. Wow. And it just got sideways during COVID, as a lot of things did, really fast. Mm-hmm. The mayor was trying to figure out, the mayor decided she wanted to merge the convention center and the CVB. And that was going to be a recipe for disaster.
There was a lot of irrational decisions, hasty decisions, knee-jerk decisions.
But that was,
so in the interim, during the past 3 years, who was directing the agency that they had hired?
The city actually hired somebody that worked within City Hall to manage the contract with the agency of record.
It just sounds like a mess, and obviously it hasn't helped their performance, and so lessons learned all around. And what a great topic, man. I think this will be one that they'll be doing case studies on for years to come. Let's shift gears. Let's talk about the topic. So as I alluded to earlier, when we'd reached out to you, Bill, we were fully expecting you to want to do, you know, because we reach out to guests and we say, you know, what's your pet peeve, or what's the thing that really grinds your gears in the industry that you want to talk about, or you feel like the industry needs to hear? Because this is a space where we can have any kind of conversation. We're not affiliated with any organization. We don't feel like we have to pull our punches. We're willing to get controversial. And so, like, we open that up to our guests and say anything you want. So I thought you were going to rail on how board governance is terrible, and in a lot of cases, and you came back and you said, "I want to." Maybe that's the second episode we'll come back and do. But you came back and said something that really got me excited, because it's one of my pet peeves. You said calendar of events on the DMO's websites, and I just love it. So first of all, before we jump into the topic, why was that the thing that came to the top of your mind? Obviously, it's something that's been grinding your gears for a while, huh?
For years.
Yeah.
And to Adam's point just a few minutes ago, you know, you can't work on yourself. You can't market to yourself. You can't market to your own interests. And this is clearly, full disclosure, this is my problem. I come to a community. I'm on the road 180 days a year. And most nights I'm in my room working on the next day's focus groups or whatever. But there are those nights where I've got a free night, and I'm a music guy, right? So I go to dinner, and now what? And I can tell you, I was actually at a Destinations International event in Minneapolis, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. And I went to the concierge, and I said, "Hey," I said, "I went online. I can't find shit about, you know, music or anything going on. Is there, you know, what's going on tonight?" And he just looked at me and he went, "Nothing." And then of course, the next day at breakfast, I bump into a friend who says, "I thought for sure I would have seen you at the Blues Club around the corner." I said, "What?" I said, "So this community just lost 100 of my dollars that I would have dropped at this Blues Club." Right. And I think that destination marketing organizations have absolutely failed for the most part. There are some that rock it, but most of us, our calendars are great on weekends. We got all the festivals, we got all that stuff, got it locked down. And then we're pretty good till 5 or 6 PM. And after 6 PM, it just is like nothing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, I get that research shows that only 20% of hotel guests will venture out after dinner. That's still 20%.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember laughing when the director of Colorado Tourism, when pot became legal there, said, we're not going to promote pot because our research shows that only 10% of people will actually travel to a destination to smoke. And I remember saying to her, only 4% of Americans ski, and you're kind of into that. So it's like 20% of every hotel guest would rather go out and do something, and we're not giving them the opportunity to do that. And that, so
and you
so
wonder if that number would go up too if we gave them more opportunities.
Right.
Maybe it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Where because they don't have options, they're not going out.
The argument, So the argument I get, I remember sitting in a session at DI a number of years ago, and a CEO indignant that somebody suggested she should add staff to, because you really have to, because your club owners and your restaurant owners aren't going to supply you with the information. They're just not. Yep. So you really have to add staff to do this. And that's a cost. I get it. And she says, I am not going to handhold these people. If they want their events on my website, they're going to, go to the website. They're going to fill out the form or they're going to call us. I am not going to babysit these people. And I remember looking at her going, who does this help and who does this hurt? This hurts everybody. It hurts the club owner. It hurts the destination. I mean, locals are going to say there's nothing to do here because they don't know that there's, I mean, I've been to communities where, the arts and culture community says we've got something every single night of the week and it's not on the website. I said, well, you call it in. They go, well, no. I don't know where that balance is. All I can say is, my absolute favorite private sector play was a guy, I'm assuming he's still there. I haven't talked to him in probably a decade, but he was a guy in his 60s who lived in Sarasota, Florida. And I met him because I found his website and I found it spectacular. It's called gotonight.com. It's still in play. It is not a good looking website. It is bare bones. It's right. But he has grown it over the past 10, 15 years, 250 clubs from Tampa to Venice load their information in every week.
Yeah.
For money. He charges.
Oh,
them.
Wow.
And they do it because if they don't, they'll miss out. He has educated those 200 some bars and restaurants to understand that everybody goes, when you're in the Sarasota, Tampa area, you go to gotonight.com and there's, 30, 40 acts tonight somewhere along the coast.
And we actually have someone like that.
The model works, right?
Yeah.
It can. Yeah.
It takes a lot of effort
commitment. Is that we haven't figured that out.
Yeah.
And we should.
Yeah. Well, we're all tapped in terms of resources. We all could use more time, more money, right? And so we individually get to choose how we allocate our resources, the time and our money. And it just seems to me that we as an industry have not prioritized, and I include ourselves in this. We haven't prioritized calendars of events to the level where we are allocating the resources. And I think that's probably a mistake. It's something we're rethinking. We actually have a local person similar to what you were talking in the Tampa area in Myrtle Beach. And he manages a website called Myrtle Live. And it lists out, he's developed relationships with 200 local facilities and all of the local bands and even the regional bands that come in and play here. Because during the summer, people don't know this about Myrtle Beach, we have over 20,000 live performances a year. So you do the math on that, right? During the summer, we got 100, 150 live performances going on every single night of the summer. And so he documents that. And you can go to MyrtleLive.com any day, and it will list out by geographic region, here's all the performances that are going on every night and where they are. And, it's like you said, it's not pretty. It doesn't have a lot of functionality. It's just sort of a PDF that he puts up there every day. But he has nurtured that over, he's been doing it for at least 20 years that I know of. So he's
Yeah.
developed these relationships and people have become reliant on it. And so now it's valuable to the audience and it's valuable to the marketplace because the bands in the facilities are getting people show up because they go to Metal Live to look where their favorite band is or who's playing their favorite establishment tonight. And so we're looking at, can we harness that? Like we've already got a guy doing it, right? I don't know if he's making money on it or not, but we can pay him some to get access to that data and find a better way to present that information to the consumer that we're obviously attracting that he's not. So why do you think, you know, obviously there's value in calendar of events, but why do you think is it because it's difficult, or is there another reason that we don't, as an industry, prioritize it to the level that we probably should?
You know, my friend John Groh at the Rockford DMO in Illinois once said, he goes, the reason that we don't do a good job of calendaring after 6 p.m. is that's not when we're in the office. Right? He says, we don't know these people. We know the people who work, you know, 8 to 5, but we don't know the people who work at night. And that's where I think, you know, those communities that have installed a nighttime mayor or have a nighttime economy that really is a focus, I think have a leg up. And obviously for most communities, that's just not feasible. Right.
Right.
But I gotta love what Chattanooga did a number of years ago. They hired somebody to try to uplift their nighttime economy at the DMO. And on most days, she would show up at work at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. She'd do email and a couple of meetings and stuff. And by 4, she was on the street and she'd be popping into restaurants and taking a picture of, you know, the chef, you know, doing tonight's special and post it. And then by 7 o'clock, she's in the clubs doing little 15-second sound checks, right? And posting it. And that it just uplifted the entire community because you focus on the fact that there is life after dinner. And I think that for most of us, you know, you get back to this, you know, that this old school, you do no marketing within 50 miles, which is, you know, a vestige of when hoteliers were, you know, populated our boards. And they didn't believe that anybody from 50 miles away would not drive home. So they weren't worthy of marketing. And yet, you know, you have this issue that if I am within 50 miles, I can go home after dinner. Give me a reason not to. Give me a reason to spend the night. And that's going to be comedy, jazz, theater, something. And I think that I think we've missed on the fact that, yeah, that this is going to take at least, depending on the size of the community, this is going to take at least a halftime person to be on the phone every day, to be, you know, pouring through the newspaper listings, the online listings. I mean, this is, it's time intensive work. I get it. But I really do believe that it has a huge upside to keep people in town longer than they normally would stay.
Yeah. I mean, we see on our website that it's the calendar of events is our, I think it's our third most trafficked section. But behind the homepage and the accommodations page, you know, the calendar
and
events
yet,
is the third most trafficked.
But I would say that Myrtle Beach, I mean, you are an iconic destination that people don't need an event reason to come to.
Right.
They're coming because you're Myrtle Beach. You know, if you're Austin, Minnesota or Kankakee, Illinois, okay. I don't think the accommodations page is first. Homepage is. I think it's gotta have to be events, right?
Yeah.
It's what can I do there? So.
Yeah, it makes sense. Adam, I've never known you to be so quiet in your life. Maybe it's just because Bill and I like to talk a lot, but chime in.
No, I think as I listen to this conversation, I can actually see a couple reasons that I believe this isn't happening. And one of the reasons I think is the old adage that one man's trash is another man's treasure. And I think it goes back to what Bill was saying earlier about people shouldn't market to themselves. And I think destinations and destination employees define events differently than visitors do. And I think that may actually be the crux of why a lot of these events don't make it onto the calendar, that we're looking at festivals and, you know, tourism events in our mind. But when I say one man's trash is another man's treasure, because events that happen on a nightly basis in a destination, regardless of visitation, to a destination might not feel like events worthy enough, worthy of being on the calendar. But for somebody who's never been to the destination, that's never experienced that club, like you're talking about, that's an event to them. That's something to do. And so I think we may need to redefine what an event is for destination organizations. So it's like an event is anything that someone can do and pay to do while they're in town. It's not a tourism-related event that has like this value that I can push out there on an ad and say, you need to come this weekend because this event is going on. It's you need to provide on your calendar of events everything someone can do that day in the destination. And that's going to include a lot of things that don't feel like events to you. And so I actually don't think it's a laziness issue in a lot of cases. I think it might be an ignorance issue. excuse me. I think it has more to do with the fact that we're not looking at events as an industry the same way a visitor would. And we need to figure out how to connect those dots.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you raise a good point. I mean, I think things like happy hours, right? Maybe the local bar has a band and you know that's happening every Tuesday or trivia night or something like that. And yeah, you sort of, you can't see the forest through the trees, right? And so you've got me thinking differently about how we want to tackle events. Now, it does lead to another challenge though, right? And I think this is a problem that DMOs have in general, is how do you present events in a hierarchical way that actually is valuable to someone that's coming? You know, a lot of people will just dump a list of events and then you'll see, okay, well, they've got these three theaters that are showing the same show every night. And so if you look at the weekly calendar, it's just dominated with like this one thing. So being able to serve the information up to someone in a relevant way is the problem that you're going to create if you just add literally every event.
Now you're going to get me talking again, because this is another thing that just drives me crazy with destination websites. And of course, the calendar of events is a component of a destination website. But one of the most critical things to do on a website, and what we're trying to work to solve even with our own website over the coming weeks, is we need someone to self-identify when they get to a website as quickly as possible, and then serve the content that's relevant to them in every category of the site. Now, have I solved that problem for DMOs yet? No, I have not, because it's much more complicated than it sounds. But the idea that we can't identify what type of events are going to be most interesting to the visitor, and we're just going to show them this massive count, like in Myrtle Beach, you're talking hundreds of things that now are classified as events per day. So when somebody clicks on the calendar of events, before showing them everything, why aren't we saying, well, what are your interests? What type of things would you like to do? And then we can filter those events by what's going to be most relevant to that visitor. This is how destinations need to be thinking about visitors and events, and even serving any information to a visitor. Let's find out who they are first so that we're not overwhelming them with a mountain of content.
Yeah, and we talked about this a couple of episodes ago about having a conversation with the consumer, right? And giving them choice is important, but it's choice isn't by having a little icon at the top right that allows them to filter, right? That's not choice. Have a conversation with them. Serve in the content questions that have meaningful results. So if I select something, then I know that what's going to happen. I mean, are you interested in happy hours? Yeah, here's a bunch of happy hours. Are you interested in live music? Oh, here's some bands that are playing. And here's some information and videos about those bands so you can learn a little bit more about their vibe. And make a contextual conversation that's enriched with video, enriched with multimedia. It's not just a blog or whatever it is that normal
even,
events are going to.
Even something as simple, Stuart, as have you booked your trip yet? Because if you know if somebody's already booked their trip, the events that are going to be relevant to them are different than if they haven't booked their trip yet. And so even asking questions like that should filter down to the calendar of events so that you know what type of things to show them. Again, I haven't solved this entirely, but I'm also not like the leading web development organization in the destination marketing industry, although there's a couple that purport to be. I would love to see them solve this problem.
Yeah, I
And I
haven't
think
seen that they've sold it
geographically
either.
part of, yeah. I mean, there's a geographic, to your point, Adam, is okay, have you booked your trip? Great. Where? And obviously for smaller destinations, not a big deal. But for a destination like Myrtle or any large footprint is, oh, you're on the east side. Okay, here are the things that are within 5 minutes of you. I mean, and that's, I mean, we're doing that right now. Terry and I are looking at a trip, and we're trying, we know we're going to this show. So how do we find the hotel and the restaurants that are within walking distance? And that continues to be a challenge. I mean, it's getting better, but it's still not easy, but we do it, right? And to your point, I mean, you're right. Everybody's a little different. I mean, there are people who want to do, and you want to talk what grinds my gears more than calendaring. It's New Year's Eve. Because this is totally personal. Madison doesn't know how to do New Year's Eve, has no clue how to do New Year's Eve, but it has no clue for somebody like me and Terry, because what we want to do on New Year's Eve may not be a champagne toast and an elegant dinner. We want to get as sweaty as possible on a dance floor with an R&B band that has horns. That's what we want. And I can't find that anywhere. And we've spent hours in the past couple of weeks, and we'll go anywhere in the country. We don't care. Looking for that moment, show me that band, show me that club. And it's like, call me, really, call me. Anybody who's
Who
watching
wants
and
the
listening, call me.
honor? Who wants the
Oh,
honor of having Bill Geist in their destination on New Year's Eve build this event, and he will be there?
yeah, sweaty
That's
Bill Geist too, not just Bill
very
Geist, but
sweaty Bill
sweaty Bill
Geist.
Geist.
You're not going to want to be anywhere near me at midnight. So,
it's so true. But I think, tying this conversation back to the Duluth conversation, I think, events, and this was touched on, but I want to dig into it a little bit. Events are as valuable to the local community as to the business, not just the residents who will attend the events, but also the businesses, right? That if we can drive more people, especially to the smaller establishments, the restaurants, the bars that are working on a wafer thin budget, if we can drive more valuable traffic, people that are going to drop more money at their establishments, they're going to put on more events. It sort of becomes this self-fulfilling thing where the more events are successful, the more events you're going to have, and then the more gravity that creates to attract more people to the events and to your destination. And so it's a vested interest. Not only does it improve the quality of life of our residents, it improves the quality of our businesses, and then it just creates a flywheel. So,
Well,
man,
yeah, and then it
you've
gets to
got me
economic
energized
development,
here.
right?
Yeah, it becomes
Because
economic
now,
development.
I mean, you've got the economic development people who are, courting this, who knows, 500 person business to locate in your community. They have to know there's something that those executives and employees can do at night, can do with their families, can, and if you've got nothing, I mean, we're working in a community right now that frankly, their number one need from economic development is a four-star hotel, because they can't bring clients in. Economic development can't bring clients in and put them at their existing hotels because they're crap. And so what kind of a message does that send to, a major employer who wants to come to your area? I think that calendaring goes as far as economic development.
I agree so much. Yeah, I mean, you really energized me today. I think we're going to take a hard look at that whole calendar situation in 2025. I think there's another piece to the calendar that is really valuable to the community overall, and that is a shared knowledge of what's going on in your community, so that organizations don't cannibalize each other, And so Myrtle Beach obviously is 60 miles, and you can have multiple festivals going on along the Grand Strand at the same time, but it's you often get events that maybe aren't public events, or maybe they're public to a degree, but they're organizations' annual meetings or fundraisers and things like that I think the DMO could play that lead role in making sure all of those stakeholders are on the same page, so we're not cannibalizing each other and putting our same fundraisers on the same date and asking the same people to attend and things like that. And so that's another way we can improve the quality of life for our community, is just by being that sort of conduit for being a leader in our industry at helping other people not make that stupid mistake of
Yeah.
cross scheduling. It
Stuart,
happens inevitably, right?
I actually think this is why every destination organization, I took marketing out thanks to our earlier conversation, but every destination organization needs to have a persona built that they have a marketing strategy and communication strategy attached to that's for local stakeholders and residents. And I believe that if you do the work on the front end to build that community and create content intentionally for them. Here's what's happening in the next 90 days that we have on our calendar, so you can adjust your calendars accordingly or something like that, and consistently add that value. Who's going to come trying to get your funding removed or attack your budget when you're adding that much value to the community? But the problem is the attitude in most destination organizations is we're only going to talk to people who aren't here. And I really believe that you're skipping so much of the tangible value you can provide to your stakeholders by amplifying the message internally as much as you do externally.
Yeah, I can't tell you the number of times that we have done focus groups, and we're in a community. And so we say we want to talk to economic development. We want to talk to, this group, this group, this group. And it tends to be the festivals slash arts culture focus group that we get them into the room, and their ideas are just flowing, and they're so excited. And as they're leaving, they say, "We should do this again." It's like, "You guys don't meet on a regular basis?" And they go, "No." It's like, that's the DMO should be the convener of that group quarterly or maybe twice a year. But, A, it lets them cross promote, but B, it also, to your point, Stuart, it's okay, you've got festivals and events that are overlapping each other, and in some cases that is cannibalizing. In some cases, it's actually a good thing, because there may be a new event that it's not going to draw anybody from out of town, but if they piggyback it on an existing major event, then that gives them legs. So whatever it is, there's the outbound calendar for consumers, but then the planning calendar, so that we make sure that we maximize our existing dates, know when the need times are, and help guide some of our partners into saying, "I know you guys really love being the third Thursday of whatever, but if you move it over here, you're free and clear. You own that weekend if you just would move, right?"
Great point. Well, we are getting short on time. We said at the beginning, this show is, it's part love letter to the industry, but it's also part therapy session. I felt like I've gone through a really good therapy session today. I feel like I've got a fresh perspective and outlook, and I'm a big fan of Qui-Gon Jinn's quote of, "For your focus determines your reality." And so this is something I think DMO should be focused on. That will determine their reality of how they integrate with their local community, how they provide value to their local community, and ultimately how they don't end up in a situation like Duluth. This is one of those tentacles, and we're going to continue to talk about multiple tentacles in this show over the next several weeks about how do we provide value to the community. And this, I think, the calendaring is a great one that I haven't put enough thought into, and after today, I definitely will. So, Bill, thank you
Hey,
for throwing us a
I
curveball
appreciate it.
today. I
I
appreciate you.
love your show. Thank you for the invitation. It's been great.
You're welcome back anytime. Now, if you want to do a shameless plug of your show, because I know it's one of the best out there in the industry.
Oh,
I'm going to
thank
say
you.
one of,
Absolutely.
because I got Adam here. If he wasn't here, I'd say
Absolutely.
it's the best.
Oh,
But
my God.
if you want to
Yeah,
give out a
doesn't want me
shameless
to
plug, go
quit.
ahead.
Yeah, so DMOU is ours. Started as a teleseminar series back in the aughts. And then we transitioned it to a podcast 5 years ago. And we just have leading voices in the industry on, and talk about some of the cool things they're doing, and some of the challenges that they're focused on. And So we have a lot of fun with it. It's been great to resurrect the original DMOU. So thank you for
Yeah,
the.
I enjoy. I learn a lot every episode, and so I have one listener that focuses on this show. You're going to see growth in your audience now by one single person, Bill, next time you publish after this is published. So,
It's my mom, Bill.
yeah, yeah. My mom too. I know.
Adam's mom is going to start listening to your show, Bill. If they want to get in contact with you, Bill, how can they do that?
DMOPros.com and pros is with a Z, and all of our contact information is there. So,
Great. Thank you. Adam, if they want to get in contact with you, where can they do that?
Yeah, Adam Stoker on LinkedIn. And of course, you can find me on Tourism IQ.
awesome. You can reach me at stuart.butler@visitmelbeach.com or on LinkedIn. And please go tune in, check out Traveling the Spectrum on Peacock. It is now streaming all six episodes. So please do that. Don't forget to leave a like, review, and tell your friends about this show. We're going to continue having these tough conversations. We're going to continue to throw curveballs like we did today with a calendar of events conversation. But if you want to be a part of the show, if you want to ask a question, if you want to be on the show, just reach out to us. This is for the community, by the community, and we just want to be a little bit better tomorrow than we were today. That's why we're doing it. And so until next time, this has been Destination Discourse. Adam's trying to get me in trouble. Not for the first time.